All right, you're very welcome back to the second hour of the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. Let's have a look at some of your comments coming in this morning. By-elections, says this listener, are a great barometer of public opinion, of government performance, plus they put a spotlight on local issues that would never be addressed. Imagine how mic issue would be raised if a TD in Donegal, if a government TD resigned. It would be an interesting by-election campaign, no doubt about that. Another caller asks, if 16-year-olds can vote, will that mean if they commit a crime, they'll be charged as an adult, they believe? I think it's a fair question. I live in an estate, and the estate next door runs to the back of my garden. They've got a dog which they let out at about 9 in the evening, and it goes mad barking. This is a time when I'm just putting my kids to bed, and it's driving me crazy and making bedtime routine impossible. Is there any laws around this? Talking to the owners is not an option, they believe. Have you had a similar situation like this in the past? And this does come up from time to time, and people have messaged in on this issue during our legal slot with Seamus. I don't know what role the council or dog warden has in this, but I do understand exactly what it must be like when you're trying to establish a nighttime routine for young ones in the house, and this barking starts every night. I wonder, is there any way you could maybe drop a letter into the house rather than confronting them? Say, look, I live close to you. I've got young children. Your dog barks every night. Is that an option? But outside of that, outside of appealing to their better judgment, is there any realistic option open to them that perhaps maybe avoids direct confrontation? I'm not saying that that's what they want to avoid, but the tone of the message suggests that. Hi, Greg. Just wondering, when is the new county manager expected to be announced? The club championship's about to start. Surely an appointment should be expected before this starts. We know Jim is strongly linked. However, that's only a rumour at the moment. I wouldn't put any money on that. I'm not sure. I didn't get to listen to the DL debate live last night. I know that's something they were discussing and there would have been a good insight in that. But I'll send out a few texts and see if we can get an answer for you. A caller says, I had to wait 4 months for my driving test. It's a disgrace. There should be made resources available to improve this. Well, they are promising extra testers to cut these waiting lists. And that might be good for people in the future if it comes to pass. But there are those waiting now. And it is very complicated when you can't drive, particularly in rural Ireland, that what happens into the future is of no comfort to them right now. Morning, Greg. I don't agree with 16-year-olds being allowed to vote. They haven't enough knowledge of life, and I don't mean that disrespectful to our young. Lots of young have completed their leaving cert and don't really know what they want to do, so don't see how they can decide at 16 as to who or how our country should be run. Stick with 18, in my opinion. I'm not being smart or facetious or whatever. I'm literally putting this out here as a genuine point of view. There are those that would say it's been left to adults 18 plus for quite some time now, and what has the outcome of that been? You know, could it get, some might say, I'm not saying it, some might say, could it get any worse if 16 and 17 year olds had their say? Maybe it's their knowledge that might change the direction of the country if you feel it's not going into the right direction. And I'm just throwing that out there as a, not even a counter view, as a further point of discussion. I just say, just a message to say, the O'Doherty's keep in Swans Park, Buncrana, is up for sale and would make a great museum. So Donegal County Council, please don't miss out on buying it up. I think later on in the show, we're going to hear from someone who believes that the a GoFundMe should be put together to try and keep that in public ownership or out of private hands. Stay with us. Great numbers attended Mass celebrated by Father Sean Doherty in St. Noonan's Cathedral, Letterkenny, last night. Such a beautiful, special evening. Faith is strong and quite evident to see when so many of all ages queued to receive Father Sean's blessing. Well done and sincere thanks to all involved in organising arrangements so those present had an opportunity to be present on a very special gathering. That comes in from Kathleen in Letterkenny. And finally, just before we take the bingo numbers, I want to give a mention to a Convoy Community Family Fun Day. It's taking place at Convoy Arsenal Pitch this coming Saturday, the 19th of August, and it runs from 12 noon until 3 p.m. So activities include an obstacle course, football games, face painting, scavenger games and crafts, football, darts and kites. And it welcome new families into the convoy community as well. The event has been kindly supported by DLDC and local community groups. All children under 14, of course, should be accompanied by an adult. So get along to Convoy Arsenal Pitch this coming Saturday between 12 noon and 3 p.m. for a great afternoon of fun. All right, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show, and it is time for...
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero-wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 91-26025.
Okay, we're joined in studio by Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace, the County's Crime Prevention Officer. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Thank you, Greg.
It's good to have you in studio. Right, okay. We're going to start with some information, and I think it's quite timely, given that it's mid-August, and a lot of the scramble for accommodation is already underway and continuing. And there is some information out there as it relates to accommodation fraud warning.
Yeah, we've been asked to put this out at this time of the year because we're looking at a 38% increase in accommodation fraud last year compared to 2021. And this is the time of year it happens, August and September. People are mad looking for accommodation. 50% of the victims are under the age of 25, and 55% of them are female. I suppose the ladies are more organised than the males in a lot of times. And again, half of this crime occurs in Dublin. But we have a lot of money being taken, over 2 million stolen in accommodation fraud over the last 5 years. So, it's significant. Plus, it's not just a monetary cost as well. You have the whole thing of the uncertainty then and trying, where am I going to stay and distances and all that. And we've heard, and you're probably aware of it yourself, of people travelling daily on the bus from Letterkenny to Dublin to go to college. It's unbelievable. So,
they're able to tap into people's desperation and panic as well. Yeah. So how, generally speaking, does the fraud work, or what are the red flags?
Well, they'll not be able to show you the property as such. They pay the deposit and you'll lose the deposit. What will happen then is people start to panic. They don't think to look at this address. Simple check, on Google Maps, what does the place look like? They ask the person who's doing the renting what services are nearby, where's the local supermarkets, that sort of thing. And they blindly pay over the money. Young people do a lot over their phones and all of that, using Revolut and the different financial platforms. And that suits the fraudster as such, because they can make off. They probably aren't even in the country. And the messages will basically only come through Messenger or WhatsApp and all that. There'll be that degree of distance between the interface, between the person looking for the accommodation and the person saying they're going to provide.
But to all intents and purposes, until it becomes clear that the property does not exist or is not available, or the person has no connection to it, the fraudster, it will seem like a regularly normal
transaction process. And what we would be saying, or the advice would be, to do your research, use the recognised letting agencies, talk to your college or your students' union, who will guide you there, and be careful of cloned websites, ensure they're real, check the URL and that sort of thing, know your rights, and if you decide then to take up the accommodation, use only trusted money transfer systems like PayPal or something like that, because it's the same as buying something on eBay. If you're involved with an auction or purchase, and particularly maybe an auction, and have some experience of this, and then the person contacts you and said, I'll take a bit less, we'll do the deal between ourselves, you've lost the protection of the money transfer system then, and you're really at the loss.
And I think really our geography works as a disadvantage to us, because, people might say, to you, listen, you don't need to come and see it, it's perfect. I'll send you some pictures of the inside, and because it's probably an 8-hour round trip in some cases, you go, right, okay, that will do. Again, that they can exploit that.
They can, and we would recommend that you use a credit card where possible, because there's protections within that. Never agree to rent a property without having an opportunity to use it. Checking that the keys work, that you have proper details. The RTB, the Residential Tenancies Board, are people who provide backup here. And again, as I said, looking for the exact address. And, I'm reminded to a company over in the southwest of the county, when there was a bit of a famine there for containers, metal containers, kind of post-COVID, and they purchased three containers at I think it was about $4,000 a piece in the UK, and sent their money off and everything. And then they got on to us, and the business owner knew me personally, and I contacted him. First thing he did is, can you send me the address? And into the address, and the address was a 3-bedroom semi-detached house in some part of London, you know. And he said, I've never even thought of that.
Yeah,
you know, and
simple stuff.
It's just a simple stuff.
But I mean, if
stuff.
You can't get down to view the property, have a key in your hand, turn the lock, there's something serious amiss. I mean, that's to request that and not be allowed yourself. Well, we've got other people coming today, and they might, you know.
Well, that's what they'll do. They'll pressurize you, and it's all this intense pressure, social engineering at its best. And, you know, like, really, most people that live in Donegal know somebody in Dublin that maybe even could do a drive-by of the place and say, what does it look like? Is it well kept? What colour is the front door? You know, a simple question like that. You know, is there a letterbox on the door? Something that would tie, and where's the closest supermarket, Super Value, Aldi, Lidl, that sort of stuff, you know. So, like, basically, it's just look at buyer beware, and if it seems too good to be true, it normally is.
Yeah, okay, so you can employ the likes of Google Maps, the RTB.ie, you would hope it is registered. If they're not registered with the Residence Tenancy Board, that in itself
that would be a red flag. And, and I know from being at college, the student union are great. They know, and you know, that this is relevant to Letterkenny as well, because we have a lot of people coming to the ATU now as well. And you have these fraudsters who mightn't even be in the country.
That's it. And we had one with similarly with a caller earlier on, who was being blackmailed for nude images, and the presumption was that this person doing it was in Ireland. It's all remote now. I mean, that
could be anywhere.
There was a house in Donegal that was put up for an Airbnb on Facebook Market, you know, and loads of people, both north and south, lost money. The property simply didn't exist. It was a picture of a house in West Donegal, and they stated it was in Rosnaula. So because of the remote nature of things now, it can be anywhere.
It can be anywhere, and it's a very good point, you know, that these people most likely won't be in the country. They're doing it remotely. You can work from anywhere. And we've had the anecdotal stories of people buying cars and going, and it's not. And it actually happened myself. One time I went to London to buy a car, and the car that I went to look at wasn't the car that was advertised, because when I looked at the ad, and it was probably in the infancy of this, it was on a forecourt, and then I mistakenly or foolishly met, and thankfully I had somebody along with me, but we were actually glad to get out of it, because it wasn't the same. The minute I was walking up, I knew it was wrong. So, like, we all can get caught. We all can let down our guard. We all can maybe think, oh, this is great and all of that. The accommodation one is a difficult one, because it does play on people's vulnerabilities in relation to moving away from home, going to college for the first time, all the costs that are associated with that, and a bit of panic as well.
And often maybe the first time people are doing it, and there's a pressure going up the line, like, no, this is perfect, Mom, this is perfect, this is the mom, you know, so there's many different reasons.
And one big red flag in this, and I probably missed it there, you know, they're unable to meet up, this sort of thing, and they want the money before you view the property or sign the lease.
Because they say you have to secure it, or someone else is going to get it, so don't allow yourself to be.
So look, it's just the time of year, it's timely that we would be talking about this, and you know, it's really centred on the main urban areas where the colleges are, but we have a very good college in our own area as well, and hopefully we don't have anybody.
Coming to the end of a string of really successful community events, often despite the poor weather. No major instances to report from.
No, and you know, things are going grand over the summer, and I suppose I just put in a note about that. You know, we had the Donegal Rally, massive crowds, Mary from Donegal International Festival, the Clonmany Music Festival, all went over very well. You'll certainly have your normal couple of public order of incidents and maybe associated quality of life incidents, as then like some damage maybe to property and that. But when you have large crowds moving around and you don't have any serious life-changing crimes happening or accidents or fatalities, it's great to see people out and enjoying themselves again. And we're still, I suppose, operating on the umbrella of post-COVID and getting back to the normal things. So it was great for that to happen. And with that in mind, we have the Letterkenny Festival between the 18th and the 20th. It's opening on Friday evening at 7:30 with the gig rig at McGettigan's Hotel. There's a soapbox derby organised for the Port Road for Sunday the 20th at 2:00. They're meeting up at the Grill car park. and then there's music on the gig rig at Sister Sarah's at 5. Now, they're expecting large crowds, and there will be some planned road closures to run some of the events, like particularly around McGettigan's Hotel and the Port Road and areas like that. On the 19th then, I think that's Saturday, we have a family fun and entertainment at the Green and Theatre at 2:30, part of Letterkenny Pride. There's a parade at 4:30, and there's music and entertainment throughout the town all day. And I see there's some great acts as well, you know, playing around some of the pubs and that. And I heard you talking about Convoy there just before I came on the 19th again. They have a fun day out there at the Arsenal grounds from 12 to 3 o'clock. So we'd hope the weather will be, it looks like it's going to be a bit more favourable anyway.
We shall see. Right, I mean, obviously you want to talk a little bit about our coastal communities. It came to the fore recently with major drug fines, significant quantities of cocaine washed up on our shores. But also we hear of crab pots, lobster pots, motorboat engines, boat engines, all that type of stuff. Still quite a bit of activity in that regard. So you have some general advice and observations.
Yeah, look, that incident really brought to the fore. We always thought, or we would have probably known differently, but people, the perception would have been the southwest coast of Ireland, Kerry and Cork and down Clare, down along there. But we've had it, you know, brought very much to our attention locally, and we're just appealing to residents in coastal communities and in the islands to be alert for what we would say unusual activities, and people in them communities know best what craft's moving around, who's moving around, what are these guys like, are they competent and capable of what handling maritime craft and all of that, and these can be the red flags there. Summer season we normally have a notable increase in activity in Donegal and down the west, but that can be used to mask criminal activity, and we've seen that. So,
what do you, is it a fair question to ask, what do you believe happened with those drugs? Do you think they were discarded a long way away? Do you have and I'm not necessarily saying what's the Garda view, but your view, would your suspicion be that they were to be intercepted by a smaller vessel and missed them, or they could have been in the water for months. We don't know. Do you? What would you suspect happened there?
I don't know personally. I don't know that much about it because I was off on leave. Yeah. No more than what I read in the papers with everybody else. But you know, it seemed to be very well wrapped and packaged. There's possibly more of it about. Maybe stuck in crevices or whatever, or maybe picked up by people. We don't know. Mm. It possibly happened in a transfer from a larger boat to a smaller boat. There was a boat that the guards impounded, and it was in Maharorti. And I think even talking anecdotally to people down there, it was noted that these people that were using that boat weren't that seafaring, hadn't great capabilities.
Didn't have the sea legs
necessarily. Yeah, and they were probably lucky that something worse didn't happen with their lives and all of that sort of thing. So look, there's craft moving around all the time. If you look at marine traffic in any given day, there's a lot of yachts, there's a lot of everything. So, you know, it's basically the community are our eyes and ears. We want to work with them. And what we're basically saying is people mightn't be that comfortable talking in face-to-face to somebody about it. The local district headquarters, as you know, are open on a 24/7 basis. But we have the confidential line, which is 1800 666 111,
yeah.
And Revenue have their Customs Drug Watch confidential line on 1800 295 295. So there are two avenues that are open to somebody. Even if you're not too sure that you're just operating on a hunch, you know, you should do something about it, because they are our communities, and these criminally minded people will take over and will, you know, we see the prevalence of cocaine use and cannabis use and all of that. We're seeing it on the roads now. Very much every week once you look through. So, and the other... Sorry,
yeah, go ahead. No, I think you were going to talk about the same thing too, but we just have to move along a little bit.
Yeah,
people with their outboard motors and what have you, there is an opportunity to get that stuff marked.
That type of theft spikes, as you said, lobster pots, outboard engines, on lakes and boats in the coastal communities. Every summer it goes up, straight up and down, and there's obviously a market for them. But the County Council with the Joint Policing Committee have bought 2 Tellus machines, the guts of 6 or 7 grand investment there, and they are available to coastal communities if they get together, talk to their local community guards or their local guards. They will come and do, in fact, we were going to do a marking session in Dunloe at the waterfront day that was cancelled due to the weather. But that's there, and, you know, if property's marked, it's less attractive to the thief, no more than
and easy to get back, because a lot of stuff is recovered.
Yeah, there is a lot of stuff recovered.
It's getting it back to the rightful owners. Yeah. Speaking of getting things back to the rightful owners, dogs particularly going missing?
Well, it's, I suppose it's the lighthearted part of the whole thing with property marking and all that. But, you know, we all note that there's been, you see, Grania puts it up on the Facebook page, there's dogs in custody in different Garda stations around the county. They're part of a family unit, and when they go missing, it causes great anxiety. And I was just thinking about this, and, you know, I know a dog went missing there lately, and the dog had its name and its tag. Now, some people say don't put the name on if somebody wants to steal it and can call and da-da-da. But you could put on your phone number or even your family name and air code, and it would make it, you know,
it's instantaneous.
Much more instantaneous.
Yeah, exactly.
And in fact, I seen a dog down in Bortonport last week was knocked down and it had a tag. Mm. And within literally 2 minutes, we knew who the owner was, and he was able to come and take the dog to the vet, and thankfully the dog recovered.
So engrave your air code, your family name, a contact number.
Something to think about.
Attach it to your dog and cats.
Yeah, and there's a cat too, you know.
I'm not a big fan of cats, but
they wear collars as well. You know.
Of course they do. Now, we still don't know what the story with these scooters is. I mean, we do and we don't.
Well, Gran, you mentioned this to me, and kind of, I wasn't really following the debate. You probably need to tell me more about it, but there seems to be a big grey area about these e-scooters, and seemingly this Road Traffic and Roads Act 2023 has just been enacted, and what they're doing is they're going to categorise these as a personal powered transporter. It's like something you'd see in Star Wars, a PPT. They're not legal for use on public roads at the minute. Regulations will clarify them, saying the power, the speed, the weight ratio.
I think it's going to be under 25 kilometres per hour or a certain output. They won't need to be registered over it. Now, it's yet to be fully decided over it. They might. So that has not been enacted or decided yet. No. But what is the situation in using them now? Is it illegal? Because we see them everywhere. Is it illegal on both the footpath and the road at the moment to ride an e-scooter?
Well, the common sense should prevail. It's illegal to ride a bicycle on a footpath.
It's not, though.
Do you think
not? It's not.
All right.
It isn't. It's not actually illegal in and of itself. I'm not disputing
that. Well, I was going to say footpath is the clue is in the name.
Yes. Not a tyre path.
It's not a tyre path. It's not a bike path. You have cycleways that are jointly used by people and bicycles and classified for that use. So you thought you got me there. But
well, I am going to get my phone out and Google it, Sergeant. 38 years
you
in
look
the job.
At, I'm not going.
38 years in the job, and it takes an upstart like me.
The Bush Telegraph's going well, isn't it? Don't they look well? That's Daniel O'Donnell. Let's say.
I don't
look a day over 38. Huh?
Exactly. 38 years in the job. God, not
if I had to think on this day 38 years ago that I'd be sitting here,
I know.
With you, I know. Such a star.
Chewing the fat. Get out of it. Come here. So as you say, common sense prevails.
No, it's going to be cleared up by the end of the year. Yeah. I suppose we're in a limbo
exactly,
at the minute, and there's no point in me being Paul Lagarde saying this is illegal and that's illegal. At the end of the day, common courtesy, if somebody's walking, if you say, if the statute book of Greg Hughes on Hayden Radio says, I'll not argue against it.
Now, come here. So, as I say, that'll all be cleared and common sense. And finally, and very importantly, if you don't mind, unfortunately, we are seeing awful devastation on our roads. One death is one too many, but we are seeing way more than that. Up until the 14th of August, 24 pedestrians, 41, are these road deaths? Yes, 41 drivers, 2 e-scooters, 15 motorcyclists, a cyclist and a pillion passenger make up a total loss of life of 105.
5 people that aren't with us
just
anymore.
And just the devastation that...
We've seen it in Donegal. You know. Yeah.
So, I mean, we have to go back to the basics.
Yeah, and I was looking through, and I know I haven't done any appeals not that today. Look, there was nothing really jumping out, but what it was jumping out at me was particularly drug driving. Mm. There was a number of accidents around the county in the last week, and when the people were tested, they were over the limits on cannabis and cocaine. They were the two things. And I suppose, I'm not saying this blase, you'll always have your drink drivers and drink drivers as a result of accidents, but this number with the drug drivers are coming up there. And it's more than with the fatalities. When you see e-scooters, there was two fatalities off one of them, so it shows the danger of them as mm-hmm. well. So you have, like, the comparison for August to date is we're plus 12, you know, plus 12 people over August 22. And that's just terrible news, to be honest. And then 23 of the people who lost their lives were in the age group between 16 and 25. And that's 1 in 4. And then the motorcyclists, 15, you know, compared to 41 drivers. So, you know, the stats are there and the roads are dangerous.
How concerned are you about the feature of particularly cocaine now in our communities? You know,
Very. It's everywhere. And there's an acceptance around it too, which is even worse, you know. And I heard Martin Harley on with you yesterday, I think he said, and he said he spoke to a guard years ago in Balbuffet, and like Martin's chairman of the Vintners and all that, and he said, you know, if somebody comes home with drink taken, you'll nearly be glad of it. And see, the cocaine is, if you read the evidence, it enhances people. They think they can do things they can't, particularly then when they get behind the wheel of a car or any motorised vehicle, whether it can be a motorbike as well, you know. And it's just the prevalence of it and the amount of it's about. And talk to anybody in any town or village and they'll tell you, you know, there's no point in saying it's not anywhere, it's everywhere. It's everywhere in this county, and it's very worrying. And it's worrying, you know, even if they get away with the road traffic part of it, it's the mental health parts then. And you can see that we see it then with calls to domestics, you know, where people are literally off their heads, you know, and the children are suffering, the spouses or partners are suffering and all of that sort of thing. So you just wonder where it'll end or what, you know, or is it going to reach when you look at, I was watching that film last night, Painkiller, I don't know, you know, the OxyContin thing.
Yeah.
It would straighten you up in your seat now.
Yep.
You know.
I know, indeed.
And when you see, you know, so.
It is a worry. It really is. Okay. Got a Sergeant Paul Wallace. Congratulations. Is it congratulations? 38 years.
Commiserations.
38 years in the force.
There'll not be much more of it.
It's quite the milestone. Will you get to 40?
No, I can't get to 40.
Can you not?
No. I can't, because I went to college before I joined.
Oh.
A lot of people joined 18, 19. I was past my 21st.
There you go.
I was the regional college here doing electronics.
Maybe they'll make an exception.
And, well, you can get extensions now because of the recruitment crisis and all of that. I think they're handing them out, particularly to guard sergeants and inspectors. Nothing to the higher ranks, really, for whatever that's all about. I'm working since I was 14.
Yeah, same as. Okay. All right, Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace, thank you very much indeed. Okay, that was Community Garda information for this week. We're back with it on this programme after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We're joined on the programme now by Aidan McFadden, who is seeking your help in trying to find his dogs. Hi, Aidan, how are you getting on?
Not so bad, Greg, yourself?
I'm doing okay, but you're not, your family's not. You've lost two of your dogs. Tell us about the dogs and what happened.
I agree. It was just a normal day, you know. We let the dogs out at about 8:30 in the morning, and we give them some food there about 9 o'clock or so. And my mother there, she went into the house. She was looking after them, and she went into the house there for breakfast. And she came back out, and maybe about half an hour later after she had her breakfast and her tea and that, and she came back out, the two dogs were gone. Another wee dog was still at the house.
Mm-hmm. Now, they are, and we're showing a picture for those watching on our social media. We'll put it up on our website as well. They're very striking dogs, aren't they? They're two beautiful animals. Describe them to us.
Aye, they're two lovely animals. One has a wee bit of white down the middle of his forehead. Another has more like a black kind of face in it. You know, they're two fawn animals. Like, they're both lovely pets, you know, that kind of way. And they're nice and, you know, calm and playful. You know, typical boxer nature, you know. I'm just devastated, you know, and the whole family's devastated. It's like losing a family member, that kind of way. Like,
when did they disappear, sir? You said they were put out. When was that?
They disappeared roughly around half nine yesterday morning.
Yesterday morning, okay. Now, is it possible they hopped a fence or ran out through a gap in the fence or something and ran off, or are you convinced they were taken?
I'm leaning towards more that they were taken, you know. I've been asking all the local farmers around me, you know, I've been round Rock, asked them to walk around their fields, you know, and they're saying yes, walk, and, you know, that they would take a look as well, you know, that kind of way. And, like, I've been driving around the roads all yesterday looking for them, and they're, you know, I can't see a sign of them anywhere. Like, my mother there, the dogs went missing then about 9:30, and my grandfather, and he went up the road driving, looking for them, and not a sign nowhere to be seen, like, you know. Like, if they were lost, that kind of way, like, they never left before, but if they were lost, they would, you know, someone would have seen them, that sort of thing.
Exactly. At this point, over 24 hours on, they are so distinctive. Someone would have heard or seen the appeal, and you would have had some information, I think, if they were in the locality at this point.
Yeah, like you know, and I've shared on Facebook, all the business pages have it up. Local councillors are working on it with me here too. I have guards contacted. I have the microchips alerted, saying that if they were scanned anywhere, they would flash up saying that the dogs were stolen or lost. Like, I'm just... you know, and there's a cash reward there going too for anyone that has any knowabouts or whereabouts of the dogs, or if they can return them safe to the house, it would be great.
Yeah, because I mean, look, they look purebred, highly valuable dogs as well. But you know, you hear a lot of suspicion about dogs being stolen. You don't actually hear about genuine cases too often, if you get where I'm coming from, Aidan. You know, a lot of people be concerned about a car slowed down by the dog, and you see, but it's not often you actually sort of hear of a dog, or particularly two dogs, actually being stolen. It does seem to be rare enough, unless I'm very much mistaken.
Well, see, that's just kind of the worrying thing about it. Like, you know, like if one dog was still standing there, you'd be thinking, you know, one went off missing. But when the two dogs was gone and no one had seen a trace of them this long time, like, you know, it's very concerning, you know. It's just, you know, a bit of a shock, you know.
Yeah, okay. So they're missing from the Creasler area since yesterday morning, Ruby and Lexi. They're quiet dogs. They're boxers, very distinctive looking. They look just like boxers, obviously. One of them has a bit of white. Where did you say?
White down the middle of its face. Yeah. And the other is just more of a black face, and like they're used to wains and stuff, you know, knocking about the family home there, and they're you know, they're very kind natured dogs, like.
Okay, well, listen, and they're very valued members of the family as well, and everyone keen to get them back. All right, Aidan, listen, it's out there. We'll see if anyone can come up with that. I'm thinking too, you know, maybe if someone works in a garage or a petrol station or a restaurant or something, and saw two dogs like this in the back of a car, or heard barking out of a dog trailer or something along those lines. You know what I mean? Maybe that could be the key to coming up with a solution to this. But we hope it's resolved as soon as possible. And we'll share it out, of course, Aidan. And we hope you get Ruby and Lexi back safe and sound as soon as possible.
That's perfect. Thanks very much, Greg.
All right, take care. That's Aidan McFadden there calling us out of Creasler. So if you know any information, get in touch with us. We'll pass it on, or contact the guards directly, or... what have you. Okay, so there are currently 13 positions in primary schools unfilled by teachers. In post-primary, it's 5. It's not insignificant, but it's certainly not along the lines of what they're experiencing. Dublin, 329 vacant posts in primary, 199 in Dublin. Padraig Curley is the Donegal and Sligo representative of the Association of Secondary School Teachers in Ireland. Padraig, this is a concern so close to the start of the new year. What is the impact on schools with so many vacancies in teaching posts?
Hello, Greg. How are you doing? Good morning. Nice to talk to you. This retention and recruitment crisis has been going on now for quite a while. I think the immediate effect that you're going to have in schools is basically that there'll be students that will be in simply being supervised rather than being taught, because there's the actual specialist teacher is just unavailable. They can't be got.
I mean, that's really significant impact on a child's education, obviously.
It is, yeah. And I mean, what management are trying their absolute best to do is try to fill those roles. But inevitably, if the position cannot be got, the school will inevitably have to withdraw that subject. So it can lead in some cases then to a lack of choice among subjects. So very, very, you know, you could get an example where, for example, chemistry would be taken off the timetable, or we'd say different subjects taken off the timetable, or even an effect on the special needs education, where they take teachers out of that role and put them back into mainstream because they simply can't get the teachers to fill the jobs.
Now, we didn't wake up this morning with this problem. It's been gathering pace for many, many years now, and we know exactly the reasons why. There obviously is the paying conditions, but then, of course, there is the cost of rental or property ownership, particularly in the capital and other urban areas. And then there is that carrot being dangled from abroad. All of these problems are ever present, or we saw them coming down the line a long time ago. Has anything been done, in your view, to sort of, by the powers that be, the Department of Education, ETC, to sort of say, right, we need to stem the loss, or we need to employ these measures to try and attract people to either stay in the job or stay in the country?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, the ASDI is a stakeholder in a Department of Education group that was set up called the Teacher Supply Working Group. And a little bit to our dismay in the ASDI, this involved basically junkets and things where they tried to encourage all these people that the Irish taxpayer has paid to educate and train throughout all the years. The thing was to try and get these people back from Dubai and UAE and Australia and stuff like that. And it's failed. And our General Secretary, Kieran Christie, is calling out this. He says, people, it's pretty proven now that offering people part-time or fixed-time positions is not going to tempt them to come back from a job abroad where they're getting actually very good pay, in some cases accommodation, flights two or three times a year, and prospects. You know, the casualisation has been a huge issue here.
Right, so say now, I was a teacher in Dubai, right, and I see all these jobs vacancies, and I have the qualifications. Can I not come back and pretty much instantly be guaranteed a full-time teaching post?
Absolutely not.
Why?
You'll be getting a part-time or fixed-time position, because what that does basically is leaves flexibility to the school where they can chop and change what position they want to fill. So you have teachers now, younger teachers, that are 6-7 years in the job and they're still going from one school to the next.
Pardon my ignorance. Why is that a case? If you've got vacancies that you can't fill, and you've got teachers potentially that might come back with some employment certainty and some respect, why would you put a barrier to that? I mean, that is shooting yourself in the foot.
Well, there's a lot of things in that, because if you keep staff generally on the short-term positions or part-time, what you have is a lot of control over that staff. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of control over whether you can move it, say, from one subject, from Spanish, say, now the next year you want a French one, you can chop and change, and they will be moved around different schools. That's become a huge issue in the teaching profession in the last, I would say, 10 years, where people, they just simply aren't getting the full-time, don't have the hours. So they move them around to this thing. Now, undoubtedly, there will be a few. That's not the total case. But for the most part, a lot of the positions have been part-time or fixed-term positions. And they're saying they just don't have the hours to give them yet. And if you take in, like, the ASDI has put forward the position where this thing has to be looked at. Mm. So obviously now, the same as an awful lot of professions, the housing crisis is a real one. You mentioned that, where people are heading off out. But the other thing that the ASDI has been concerned about, basically, is the cost of the teacher education and the actual length of it.
Five years.
So, I mean, if you look at it, I was talking to one of my ex-pupils the last time, and they said they were at different jobs, and they were in Temple Moor doing the guards and stuff, and it was basically 8-9 months And I said, right, talking to the guy outside, nice guy. And they were trained, and obviously they would get ongoing training on the job. But if you look at a teaching profession, 5 years, and the average cost to the parent or to that person with accommodation expenses and the whole lot is in the region of 13,000 to 15,000 a year. That's a lot of money before you're even trained.
Patrick, do you think to some extent too, and I'm going to throw nurses in here, if you don't mind, and midwives, that I think those groups and teachers are still treated like as if that work is a devotion. That, in other words, they, you know what I mean? I don't know how you would actually clarify it or define it or whatever, but the way they're treated, it's as if, you know, we will facilitate you fulfilling your dream and your calling rather than, I mean, let's not forget, before a lot of these teachers are even finished their studies, the people are over from the UAE and elsewhere saying, come over here, we'll love you, we'll give you this, we'll give you that. And what are we doing? We're saying, well, you know what, 5 years at it, you must be really dedicated. It's 7 years for the priesthood. Come on, stay here in Ireland. We're not competing.
It's like a vocation is the word you're looking for. Oh, it's a calling. And you see, I mean, if you get a job, if you go and get trained, and the sooner you're into the workplace, you're starting to pay back those fees. But the extraordinary thing in the teaching profession is after this 5 years, you then have a Dreahaid induction when you start teaching. And after 5 to 6 years actually teaching, you're still viewed as a very, very junior teacher in the school.
And you're in your late 20s then at that point, really, effectively, aren't you, Balshaw?
Well, basically, I see that most of the teachers now, they're well in their 30s. They're not on any, they don't own any property. They don't own pretty much anything. They can still have a short-term contract. So people are voting with their feet. They're saying, listen, if I do 5 years in a third level, I'll be going for some other sort of a profession. So if we looked at this, I mean, it said, this is a statement, it's astonishing that the minister was seeking to lure teachers to return from other countries this summer on the promise of part-time or fixed-time positions. This must change where, subject to satisfactory probation, permanent appointments are made available. And shortening of the extraordinary long teachers' pay scale and doubling the number of middle management posts in schools. That's another thing too. There is very, very little promotion in the teaching.
There are people in Donegal, and not conflating issues, but there are people in Donegal that would have seen when the campaign was on for a proper redress scheme for defective concrete, the battle for the public's minds. In other words, the taxpayer can't foot the bill for this. It's absolutely, you know what I mean? And it was done, and it was, you can see the tactic, but I thought it was a dirty tactic. I just wonder too, sometimes, if people rely on the general view that seems to be there in the population, or does pop its head up, that teaching is handy. You get loads of paid holidays and such. And therefore, I just think sometimes that's used by the powers that be as some sort of a shield. Do you know what I mean? The battle for the public's minds, that they can get away with maybe not doing what possibly should be done for teachers. Again, I hope that doesn't sound like a conspiracy theory, but sometimes in the absence of something obvious, you kind of have to say, well, if it's not that, it must be this.
I've come across that attitude, you know, an awful lot. And look, at it's tongue-in-cheek and a bit of banter. But generally, you'll always find that there'll be sympathy for the nurses and quite the opposite for teachers. Now, I suppose, you don't want to be seen as whinging and complaining all the time. But I think from my point of view, I would like to leave the profession in a healthy state that younger people would feel that it's a good career path, it's a good job, they'd be well-educated, motivated people going into teaching. Because if you look at the alternatives then, you look at other countries, and where there's a very low morale among the teachers, the education profession very soon goes to the wall, and then you end up with any parents in that position thinking, oh my God, I won't go for public school, I'll actually pay for my son or daughter to go to private school because they'll get it'll be education there, whereas it's more or less, counting the numbers in public systems. That's
it's
another
not just
jurisdiction.
Now too, it's not just now too either. I mean, the ramifications of this have felt in for people with special needs, for those who have not, in terms of outcomes, in terms of progression to third level, then chuck in the whole situation with AI and how that's going to influence things. I mean, we really don't know where what we'll be outputting in terms of students in 5, 10, 15 years' time. But with all of these challenges, we could lose a competitive edge really, really quickly. I think it's imperative the government, whichever government is this one or the next or the one after that, really see the importance of all of this. Pádraig, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate it. Pádraig Curley, Donegal and Sligo rep of the ASTI.